power to bring death was equal to that of bringing about life. He felt enraptured as the hot scarlet blood flowed into the soil. "After life, death," he chanted. "After darkness, light." He looked up and stared round until he found the brown bird. It was perched up in a cherry oak's branches, head cocked on one side, observing the carnage. "You've seen what we are," Quinn called out. "You've seen us naked. You've seen we're not afraid. We should talk. I think we have a lot to offer each other. What have you got to lose?" The bird blinked as if in surprise and launched itself into the air. Latton let the kestrel's wonderfully clear sensorium fade from his mind. The sensation of air flowing over wings remained for several minutes. Flying the predator via affinity was always an experience he enjoyed. The freedom granted to creatures of the air was unsurpassed. The ordinary world rushed back in on him. He was in his study, sitting in the lotus position on a black velvet cushion. It was an unusual room, an ovoid, 5 meters high, its curving walls a smooth polished wood. A cluster of electrospherent cells were fitted flush with the apex, supplying a glimmer of jade light. A single cushion on the cup of the floor was the only thing to break the symmetry. Even the door was hard to see, its lines blending with the grain. The study possessed a unifying simplicity, freeing his mind of distractions. In here, his body motionless, his affinity expanding his consciousness through biotech processors and incorporated brains, his mentality was raised by an order of magnitude. It was a hint of what could be, a pale shadow of the goal he chased before his exile. Latton remained sitting, thinking about Quinn Dexter and the atrocity he had perpetrated. There had been a lurid flash of gratification in Dexter's eyes as that helpless colonist had been thrown to the sais. Yet he must be more than a brainless, sadistic brute. The fact that he had recognized the kestrel for what it was and worked out what it represented was proof of that. "Who is God's brother?" Latton asked the house's subsentient biotech processor network. "Satan, the Christian devil." "Is this a term in wide use?" "The term is common among Earth's waster population. Most arcologies have sects built up around the worship of this deity. Their priest-stroke-acolyte hierarchy is a simple variant on that of the more standard officer-stroke-soldier criminal organization. Those at the top control those at the bottom through a quasi-religious doctrine, and status is enforced by initiation rituals. Their theology states that after Armageddon has been fought and the universe abandoned to lost souls, Satan will return bringing light. The sects are unusual only in the degree of violence involved to maintain discipline among the ranks. Because of the level of devotion involved, the authorities have been generally unsuccessful in eradicating the sects." "That explains Quinn, then," Latton thought to himself. "But why did he want the money in the colonists' Jovian Bank credit disk? If he was successful in taking over Aberdale, no trading boat would ever stop there. He couldn't buy anything. In fact, the governor would be more than likely to send in a posse of sheriffs and deputies to stamp out any Ivet rebellion as soon as word leaked out. Quinn must know that. He wasn't stupid." The last thing Latton wanted was for the outside world to show an interest in Schuster County. One marshal digging around was an acceptable risk. He'd known that when he took the colonists from their homesteads. But a whole team of them scouting through the jungle in search of renegade devil worshippers was totally out of the question. He had to know more of Quinn Dexter's plans. They would have to meet, just like Quinn had suggested. Somehow the idea of agreeing to his proposition was vaguely disturbing. The Coogan was moored against a small sandy spit, an hour's sailing downriver from Schuster Town. 2 silicon fiber ropes had been fastened to trees on the shore, holding the tramp trader secure against the current. Marie Skibbo sat on the prow, letting the warm evening air dry the last traces of water from her hair. Even the humidity had fallen off. Renison, Lalonde's largest moon, was rising slowly above the dusky grey treetops, adding a glimmering oyster light to the gloaming. She sat back against the flimsy cabin wall and watched it contentedly.